What makes a life a good one? Is it the adventure you have? Or the friends you find along the way? Maybe it's pursuing your passion while striving to protect, defend, and save what you believe in every single day. So what makes a life a good one? In the Coast Guard, we think it's all of the above and more. But you'll have to find out for yourself. Visit GoCoastGuard.com to learn more.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
With all the stresses of life, it can be easy to lose perspective on what really matters. But Heineken believes that life is about being with friends and opening yourself to new experiences. Because when you live spontaneously and embrace the unexpected, it's a chance to create new stories and connections. You just have to be open to it. So enjoy a refreshingly cold, full-bodied Heineken lager today with its deep golden color, light fruity aroma, mild bitter taste, and a crisp, clean finish. From the Jill Schwartz Memorial Library, this is Obscure, the podcast in which I read Jude the Obscure out loud and comment on it as I go. Today, a very special episode. Because I just finished the first part of Jude the Obscure, today is going to kind of be a review. A review of the book thus far. And because I do not trust myself to recount the book as well as maybe I should, what I've done is I've enlisted somebody to help me. And the person I've enlisted is my daughter, Ruthie. You want to say hello?
Hi.
You got to talk a little bit better into the microphone.
Hi.
Great. Really great. Ruthie's 15, and she is, as they say, not a reader. Would you agree with that?
No.
What do you mean, no? You don't read.
You
got to talk into the microphone.
I don't like facing it.
Well, that's how microphones work. You literally have to face them.
I'm doing it.
All right. And so Ruthie has never read Jude the Obscure, like most of you. When Ruthie, what books do you like?
I can't think of any.
Well, exactly. That's sort of my point. That is sort of my point. Ruthie is a binge watcher of things. What are you watching right now?
Criminal Minds.
And how many seasons are there of Criminal Minds?
A lot.
And how many have you seen?
Only like two.
All right. And what were you watching before that?
Shameless.
And how many seasons of that are there?
Eight.
And how much have you watched?
I've watched it twice.
Okay. So that's okay. So you sort of understand where Ruthie's head is at. And so, Ruthie, what I'm going to do is I'm going to try to tell you the story of Jude the Obscure up to this point.
Okay.
And this is in the interest of our listeners to give them a recap and to get you excited about 19th century British literature.
I am excited.
Okay, great. Here's how it starts. There's this kid. You want to guess his name?
Mm-hmm.
Jude. His name is Jude. The book is called Jude the Obscure. Yeah, well, that's what I'm asking. I'm asking you to think and talk okay. into the microphone.
Damn.
If you want, you can hold it. You can hold.
No.
Okay. There's this kid, Jude. He's just a boy. He's a wee lad, just 6 years old when the story begins, mm-hmm. maybe seven. And it's in this little town called Mary Green. He has gone to live with his aunt after his parents died. And I know you like things about dead parents. or kids that get sick. You like both of those kinds of things.
Yeah.
All right. So his parents are dead, and he's been sent to live with his aunt Drusilla. And Drusilla does not much care for Jude. She is a sort of a spinster aunt. She runs a little bake shop, and she is overheard by Jude talking to her friends, saying things like, it would have been better if Jude had died along with his...
Who? His mom?
His mom?
Yeah, who's the woman? He's Drusilla.
What did I just say?
I forgot.
You forgot to listen, right? I literally just said his parents died. That was the first thing out of my mouth.
I forgot.
How could you forget? I literally said it 15 seconds ago. I said he went to live with his aunt.
Okay.
He went to live with his aunt Drusilla. She took him in. Okay. Mm-hmm. She was overheard by Jude saying it would have been better if he were dead with his parents. All right. So you get a sense of what Drusilla's like. At the beginning of the book, Jude is occasionally goes to school, and he likes school a lot. His school teacher at the very beginning of the book is leaving town, and Jude is heartbroken because he really likes this school teacher, but the school teacher's like, Jude, I got to go. I gotta go to Christminster, which is this big town nearby. I'm going to get myself an education, and I'm going to become a great student of the divine. And Jude is heartbroken. And he ends up deciding that his life in Mary Green is basically worthless. He has nothing. He has nobody who loves him. He gets fired from his job. He's only like 6 or 7 years old, but he has a job. And his job is that he's like a scarecrow. Crows come into this cornfield, and his job is to scare them off. And then he's so tenderhearted that he says to the birds, come and eat the corn. And the farmer catches him and basically kicks his ass. He beats Jude with this thing called a clacker, which is the thing that Jude is supposed to use to scare off the birds. And the farmer beats him with it and fires him.
Why?
Why? What did I just say? The birds came and what did he do?
Oh, he didn't do anything.
Right. So that's what, so he wasn't doing his job.
Okay, now I get it.
My God. I just want to point out to the listeners that my daughter is a straight A student. I want to reassure the listeners that my daughter is a great student and a fine person and a smart person. But as she says to me regularly, I forgot to listen. And so as I'm talking to her, I can see her eyes focused on the distance of the Jill Schwartz Memorial Library. Her eyes are located somewhere beyond the walls. I have to maintain eye contact with her to make sure that the words are penetrating that feeble skull of hers. So he's fired, he's heartbroken, he's alone in this world. And he decides that the only possible way for him to get out, for him to elevate himself in this world, in this wretched world,
where does he live?
In England.
What time?
The 1890s. Not much was going on. It was a time of the Industrial Revolution was kind of ramping up. Life was changing in the cities.
The book Olive.
What?
The play about the boy named Oliver.
Oh, Oliver.
Yeah.
Yeah, roughly the same time as Oliver. And Christminster is a fictional town in the county of Wessex. That's where his teacher, Mr. Phillotson, has gone. That is where Jude decides he needs to go to get an education, to follow in Mr. Phillotson's footsteps, and to become an educated man. And so what he does is he wanders over up this hill where he can maybe just kind of make out Christminster in the distance. And he begins fantasizing about what his life would be like if he could just get an education, if he could just learn.
But he's already at school.
You've just revealed a plot hole in the book that I hadn't really considered. You're right. He goes to school. The reason he wasn't going to school was because he had this job at the farm, but he got fired from the job. So why doesn't he just go to school full time? I think he has to help out Drusilla at the bake shop. He's got things to do. He can't be going to school all the time. And the school itself is a small country school. It's not going to prepare him.
Can you walk?
What?
Like in Little Prairie, does he have to walk to school?
No, he takes the car. He fantasizes about Christminster, decides that that's what he's going to do. He's going to go get an education at Christminster, but he doesn't know how to do that. He almost runs away from home. He gets a little bit down the road, turns back out of fear, decides that he has to learn more. He has to figure out how to get an education. He runs into a fella, a quack physician. Do you know what a quack is?
No.
It's somebody who is a phony doctor. Okay. And this guy makes his living going around and selling fake medicines to people. Snake oil salesman is what they used to call him here in America. And he runs into this guy and he said, but his name is Dr. Vilbert. And he thinks, well, he's a doctor. So even if he's a crummy doctor, he has an education. And he says to the doctor, "Doctor, will you help me get educated in Greek and Latin?" Because he knows he needs Greek and Latin to go to Christminster to go to college. And Dr. Vilbert says, "Well, it's no problem, my boy, no problem at all. What I'll do is I'll make a deal with you if you make a deal with me. What I need you to do, son, what I need you to do is this. I need you to go to every house and tell them that Dr. Vilbert's pills are the best pills in the world. I've got female pills. I've got all kinds of salves and lotions and balms. And if you do that for me, meet me back here in 2 weeks and I will give to you, my son, my original grammars of Greek and Latin." And grammars are just books.
Does she actually know that?
I don't know. Well, Jude does everything that he's asked to do. Jude goes around to the town, to the townsfolks, and he tells them all about Dr. Vilbert and how wonderful his cures are. And he meets him back at that very spot 2 weeks later. And Dr. Vilbert does not even know who he is. "Oh, yes, yes, you're the boy that was troubling me 2 weeks ago. Well, I forgot to bring the books this time, but I'll bring them next time." And Jude realizes he's been conned.
Couldn't Jude also just not have done it? Instead he did?
I suppose so, but Jude is an honorable young man. He's an honorable boy. He kept his end of the deal and expected Dr. Vilbert to do the same. So once again, Jude has his heart broken, his hopes dashed. And now we're going to take a quick break here, Ruthie, just to pay for this show and your college. Mostly your college, actually really almost nothing, because I make no money doing this. Oh, there's great stuff happening. If you like great stuff, here's the place to find it. Never Not Funny. If you've never listened or you haven't checked it out in a while, now's the time. What's Never Not Funny, you ask? Well, it is comedian Jimmy Pardo's podcast, long-running Never Not Funny podcast, where he jokes around with his sometimes famous, always funny friends. Now, look, I could sell you a line here of bull about how Jimmy's solving murder mysteries or interviewing presidents, but that would not be true. No, this is just a free-flowing conversation built around Jimmy's knack for always finding the funny. I dare you not to laugh. I dare you. Recent guests include Patton Oswalt, Rob Reiner, Colin Hanks, Cristela Alonso, Taylor Goldsmith from the band Dawes, and the hilarious Jamila Jamil, who plays Tahani on The Good Place. Of course, you'll also find Earwolf favorites like Scott Aukerman, Andy Daly, Janet Varney, Dave Holmes. If you're new to the show, why not check out the highlights from Podcast-a-thon 2018 featuring Conan O'Brien, Tig Notaro, Rory O'Malley, and Paul F. Tompkins. You'll find that right in the Never Not Funny feed. Check out Never Not Funny on Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Welcome back to Obscure. I'm here with my daughter, Ruthie, and I'm just filling her in on everything that happened during the first part of Jude the Obscure, and I'm struggling a little bit to keep her attention, hopefully not yours, and she's refusing to speak into the microphone, which I have repeatedly instructed her is where one speaks when one is recording one's voice, but at least for a brief few moments, she is not doing what she so often does around this house, which is utterly ignore me. She's just mostly ignoring me. So, Ruthie, Jude was just conned by Dr. Vilbert, and next he sends a secret message to his old teacher, Dr. Phillotson, in Christminster. Mr. Phillotson had left a piano behind because it was too bulky to move, and he puts a little note in the piano when Mr. Phillotson sends for it, and he says, please send me some books on Greek and Latin. And then, what do you know? A little while later, a package arrives from Christminster. It's from Phillotson. It's books of Greek and Latin, and Jude devours them. Jude devotes every waking moment to studying these languages. The Bible, the Old Testament, the New Testament, and now he's getting older, and he's growing, and he's now a young man, and he has devoted the last several years to learning. He is like a monk in his fervor for studying. A burning desire, a fervor.
Oh, I thought it was a person.
You thought a fervor was a person?
Like a job.
No, that okay. would be a furrier.
Okay.
Somebody who buys and sells furs. And he realizes that if he's going to go to Christminster, he needs a trade, a job. He needs to understand.
I thought he was going to be a bishop.
Well, yes, but he needs to have money in order to go and to study. So he needs to have some sort of job that he can do. So he apprentices himself to a stonemason to learn how to cut stone. And so he's doing that in the day, and by night he's studying Greek and Latin and the old religious texts. And then, Ruthie, he's walking along one day, somewhere he's never been before, down by a babbling brook.
The woods.
Sure, the woods. Okay, you're doing very well. I want to tell you and assure you, you're doing very, very well. And you're helping me explain the story.
Yeah.
He hears the voices, female voices. Young women. He sees them down by the creek, the babbling brook. They're cleaning pig parts. They're butchering pigs. They're sorting out. They're pig farmers, and they're doing pig work with dead pig parts. And one of the girls, seeing Jude, kind of like a prank, picks up the pizzle of the pig and throws it at him. I see you shaking your head. You don't know what the pizzle is. Well, I didn't know what it was either. And I thought it was just, what can I tell? Can I tell you the story? I thought it was just like pig guts, pig intestines.
Mm-hmm.
Well, after I released the episode where I described this, several people told me that in fact,
the tail.
No, you're not going to like what the pizzle actually is. It's the actual penis of the pig. And she throws it at him. Well, you were kind of far off. She throws it at him, smacks him in the face.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, what the hell? And he's basically like, who did that? And this girl, her name is Arabella, is like, well, I might have been me. I might have done that. And he's mad at her. And they sort of meet down by the brook and they start talking. And it turns out Arabella maybe has a little bit of a thing for Jude. She finds him attractive. He finds her attractive. They agree to go on a date. All right.
Yeah.
After this strange meeting, they agree to go on a date. And that Sunday, they take a walk together. They kind of get to know each other a little bit. There's a kind of instant attraction between Arabella and Jude and Arabella. And suddenly, all the studying that he's been doing for the last 6-7 years, whatever it is, it kind of goes right out of his head. Suddenly, he meets a girl, and like that, you hear it? Wait, can you snap? I don't think I've ever... Well, let me hear you snap. I don't know that I've ever heard you snap.
Let
me hear you snap.
My hands are sweaty.
There's a snap from me.
Miami.
I heard. Okay, I kind of heard it. And now here's a whistle from me. You can't do any whistling? Huh. Okay, I believe you. I didn't know.
Play the flute.
You cannot play the flute.
Yes, I can.
No, you can't.
Are you kidding?
You might be able to like squeak out a note.
I played the flute.
You did play the flute. When was the last time you picked up a flute?
Sixth grade.
Okay, and now you're going into 10th grade. It was 4 years ago, and I hate to break it to you, but you weren't great then. They go on a date. It all goes well. There's a little kiss at the end. He walks into her house and basically all her neighbors are there and her parents are there, and they introduce him as her intended, meaning like, oh, this is Arabella's boyfriend. They're probably going to get married. They just met. And Jude's like, what the? I got to get out of here. Jude leaves. He's going to go back to his studying, but his head is in the clouds. Right. And he is developing feelings for this girl. Meanwhile, Arabella is saying to her friends, I met this guy. I think he's really cute, but I don't know. I don't know if I'm going to be able to hold on to him. And her friends say to her, Arabella, you know what you got to do? You got to get yourself pregnant by him. Mm-hmm. And Arabella's like, really? And her friends are so devious and like, yeah, that's how you trap a guy. You trap him by getting pregnant. Now, Ruthie, I spoke to a guy named Dan Savage about this very subject. I will tell you, I see a concerned look on your face.
Oh, you sound familiar.
Okay. Dan Savage is maybe the nation's foremost sex expert. And I said to Dan Savage, would you recommend this course of action for girls who want to have boyfriends?
Yes. Okay.
He did not say yes. And I asked him about the sex lives of your teenagers. And like, what are you supposed to do with your teenagers? Like, how do you, like, what do you do? Like, how do you have that conversation? And Dan was like, because Dan's got a 21-year-old. He was basically like, you just got to be open and transparent and honest with them and make sure that they're safe. That's the advice I'm going to give to you. I just want you to be safe. All right.
Okay.
All right. Do you have any questions about sex that you'd like to ask to my global audience?
No.
Yeah, I didn't think so. I basically know where you are most of the time.
Yeah.
My wife, Martha, who you've met, keeps the tracker on her phone.
She loves it.
She loves it? Is that what you just said? Yes, she likes to know where you are. I do too. But I refused to get the tracker on my phone
and
because I thought it was creepy. I said to mom, it's fine to monitor like the whereabouts of minors, but I think it's weird for adults to monitor.
Well, I can monitor mom.
Yeah, when you know where she is, she knows where you are.
Yeah, I know when she's late.
decides that she's going to seduce Jude and she's going to try to get pregnant. And by the way, Thomas Hardy, who is the author of Jude the Obscure, basically lays the blame for this entire relationship at Arabella's feet. He's saying Jude is just this naive 19-year-old who bears no responsibility for anything that happens in his life. Everything is Arabella's fault. Does that seem fair to you? Do you think that the guy has any responsibility in the sexual relationship between himself and this lady?
Yes.
Are you just saying that because you know that that's the correct answer, or because you think it takes two to tango, as the saying goes?
She's a crazy one, right?
I didn't say she was crazy.
Well, to trap him is kind of crazy.
I'm going to explain the context for you because I have some sympathy for Arabella. It's the 1890s. She's the daughter of pig farmers. She doesn't have an education. She has no job opportunities. Pig farming as a profession is kind of drying up there in Wessex. So for her own survival, she feels like she needs to get a husband. And what's the way to get a husband? To get yourself pregnant, at least according to Arabella's friends. And so in doing this, she's trying to assure her own future, just as Jude is trying to assure his own future by studying and going to Christminster. But here's what she does, Ruthie. She seduces him and she does not get pregnant. Wait, you just indicated like she was going to kill him? What did you just do? You just indicated like somebody just got killed. What was that?
She kills him.
She does not kill him. The book is called Jude the Obscure. If he died right there, the book would be over. And you know that this is only the first part.
I didn't know that.
When I asked you to be on, I said there's different parts. I finished the first part, and that's what I want to tell you about. The first part.
Okay.
You're grounded. We need to take another break. This is Obscure.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe.
Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey. Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Byte Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Back to Obscure, Michael Ian Black with my second favorite child, Ruthie. I'm catching her and all of you up on the first part of Jude the Obscure. We were just talking about how Arabella seduces Jude. And Ruthie, she does not get pregnant, but here's what she does. She tells him she's pregnant.
Oh, well, they did that in Glee.
They did that in Glee?
Yeah.
What happened?
Schuster, wife.
Okay. How many times did you see Glee?
200 times.
Schuster's wife.
Good old Schuster's wife. Mm-hmm. Said she was pregnant and she wasn't because they were probably going to get a divorce.
Huh. So she lied.
Yeah.
Well, that's exactly.
She was crazy, so.
Well.
No, but she was.
Okay, I believe you that she was. I don't think Arabella's crazy. And I appreciate the parallels between Jude the Obscure and Glee, which you've watched in its entirety two or three times. But Arabella's not crazy. She's just devious. And she just wants a husband. And she wants Jude to be that husband. And so she tells him that she's pregnant when she is not. And Jude, because he is honorable, asks her to marry him, even though he suspects that she is not the woman that he thought she was, that she is not maybe the best of women. He says something like that in the book. So they get married. They move into a little cottage together. Jude is working for pennies as an apprentice to a stonemason. They're very poor. Jude and Arabella, their married life is not exactly what he had envisioned. And eventually...
Does she have a child?
What did I just say? Is she pregnant, yes or no?
No.
Then how does she have a child?
Well, eventually he's going to catch on, so she has to have a child.
What do you mean she has to have a child? You mean she's like going to steal a child? She's going to steal a child and just like show up with it?
Glee.
What?
That's what they did in Glee.
Oh, in Glee she stole...
Eventually... He's going to know that she's not pregnant.
Right.
Well, what else is she going to do?
I don't know. You tell me. What do you think would happen?
She could tell the truth.
Uh-huh.
But I guess maybe they don't get divorced.
Okay. You're very close, actually. She does confess at a certain point. He says, when is this baby going to be due?
You say she lost it?
No, she says she was never pregnant to begin with.
I would have been smarter.
Yeah, you would have been smarter. And they get into a huge fight about it. And then she starts manhandling his books. She gets her greasy pig-covered fingers on his books. This outrages him. He shakes her violently.
Why did she touch his books?
Exactly. She has no business touching his books. They're his most precious objects. And she's basically rendering a pig, and she's got pig fat all over the books. And he's
because she's mad.
They're having a big fight. Yeah.
She picks up his book.
Yep. So she gets furious. She runs out into the road. She basically screams, "This guy's killing me. He's assaulting me. He's terrible. He's violent." And Jude is so disgusted. And he's going to go out and he's going to drag her back into the house, but he doesn't. He just says, "Look, babe, it's over." And she's like, "Yeah, it's over." And she says, "I think it would be best if I move to Australia with my parents." They're talking about going anyway. Pig farming here in Wessex is a dying industry. will you be all right if I just leave? And he's like, I think that would be great. And he gives her all the money that he has. He gives her all the furniture he has because he just wants to be done with her.
So they don't get actually divorced?
They don't get actually divorced, no. But she
did get actually married?
They did get actually married.
Different times?
Yeah, different times. I mean, I love your observation. Yeah, these are different times. And now Jude is free to resume his studies if that's what he chooses to do. He goes back to that hill where he first spied Christminster. And for the first time in a few years, he gets reinvigorated and he decides he's going to pursue his studies once again. And that is the end of the first part of Jude the Obscure. Are you into it?
Not into it.
All right. Well, that's a very promising start. Ruthie, I want to thank you so much for coming on to Obscure and being a part of the podcast. You've been a real treat, especially when you remembered to listen.
Mm-hmm. Thanks.
From the Jill Schwartz Memorial Library here in the wilds of Connecticut, I am Michael Ian Black. Until next time, when we begin part second of Jude the Obscure, I wish you adieu. Obscure is brought to you by Earwolf. For more information on Obscure, visit our show page at earwolf.com and subscribe, won't you, in your favorite podcast app like Stitcher or Apple Podcasts, so you do not miss one exciting episode of Jude the Obscure. Obscure is produced by Jennifer Brennan, Mary Shimkin, and Robin Lynn, who also mixed and edited today's show with music composed by Craig Wedren. Special thanks to everyone at Earwolf, especially Chris Bannon, Colin Anderson, and the Earwolf engineer team of Brett Morris, Sam Kiefer, and Ryan Connor. If you would like information about sponsoring our show, email hello@midroll.com. From the wilds of Connecticut, I'm Michael Ian Black.
This is Tony Rodriguez.
This is Carlos Santos.
This is Raiza Licea.
And this is Oscar Montoya.
When our powers combine, we are
Spanish Aquí Presents.
We have a brand new podcast here on Earwolf, bringing you the best of the best of lo mejor of the Latinx comedy.
Join us every Tuesday as we chat about what's going on in our lives, Latinx culture, and qué es lo que?
Lo que nos está picando.
Lo que te pica. Don't worry, we'll tell you what that means if you listen.
We'll also be joined by a new guest every single week. We'll get to know a little bit more about their lives.
Every single week.
Uh-huh. And then we'll make them sit back and watch us improvise their lives right back to them.
Improvisation. Spanish Aquí Presents premieres July 16th. Subscribe now in Stitcher,
Apple Podcasts,
or wherever you listen.
O donde sea.
Spanish Aquí Presents.